Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Golf Time Midwest Magazine. If you haven't seen it in your mailbox with your copy of the 2023 Wisconsin.Golf yearbook, you can find it on Wisconsin.Golf by following the link on the right-hand side of our main page. It will take you to the digital version of Golf Time Midwest Magazine, where you will find directions on how to enter our great golf story contest. The basics of the contest are this: 350 words or less, funny, fantastic, or of human interest. The lucky winner will be the most popular person around. He or she will win a weekend getaway for six to Eagle Ridge Resort in Galena. So go to our website at Wisconsin.Golf for more details, or you can head on over to our sister website, golftimemag.com, and fill out the entry on the website. Remember, you have until May 1st to enter our great golf story contest. And Gary D'Amato, we got a great golf story for our listeners today. Winter has returned to parts of Wisconsin, and it might be coming to an area near you. Let's check the weather outside the Caledonia headquarters south of Milwaukee. Gary, any sign of snow for you yet? My radar is saying you're free and clear for now.
Yeah, it's just cold rain, Rob, and a lot of wind. The wind is really howling right now, and hopefully no snow here, but I know some other parts of the state are getting it, and it's crazy to have snow in the middle of April, but it does happen.
Well, I think what's crazy is the weather got so good so fast, and I mean, we're talking 70s and 80s, and you were enjoying the kind of life that we lead down here in Arizona most of the year. And I think people really settle in the idea that the golf season is here. Now we got to put a pause on it. A lot of the course openings that we have on our list are posting to Facebook that no golf today for sure. And depending on how much snow they get, I mean, it started out, it was going to be 2 to 4 inches. And now in some parts, they're talking 6+. So it could be a little bit of a delay. The good news is this is kind of like the Colorado snow, Gary, where it comes and it leaves right away, right? That's what I mean, temperature-wise, you're going to get rid of this for us, aren't we?
Yeah, it should, you know, it'll be gone in a couple of days, but it's still frustrating after, as you mentioned, after the week of weather we had where it was in the 70s and low 80s in some parts of the state all week. That's the frustrating part, is to get the tees like that and to get excited about getting out and doing things, golf or otherwise, and then you have to put a pause on it.
As we tape, record Talking.Golf here on Sunday midday, mid-afternoon, it looks like the snow has just entered the Madison area. Wait, Gary, just north of you, there's actually some thunderstorms with some heavy orange on the radar. This is nuts. I mean, it was kind of cool because I think pretty much everything south of Wausau, actually Merrill Golf Course in my mom's hometown of Merrill, Wisconsin, just north of Wausau, open for the season this year. So you can kind of draw a line south of Highway 8 and pretty much, you know, there's at least one or two courses open in that area, and then everything south was really, you know, starting to get in mid-season form. Lake Arrowhead had opened near Wisconsin Rapids, Bullseye Country Club, a lot of the central Wisconsin courses, a number of courses up in Door County had either opened or set openings here for the next week or so. But I guess the big question, Gary, is have you gotten out to play?
I have not, other than playing on my trip to the Masters on the way home, Rob. I have not gotten out to play yet. I came down with a cold this past week, and it really knocked me for a loop. And it was disappointing because we had all that great weather. I did get out and chip and practice my chipping and putting yesterday, though, at Oakwood Park. So at least I got some time in on the golf course.
Judging by what I'm seeing on Facebook, a lot of people did get out to play. You can go to our website again. The list in Southeast Wisconsin is really extensive and it's starting to pick up now in the Green Bay area, the Eau Claire area. And, we continue to add, daily to, our course openings listings. And, we will continue to do so, once the snow melts. I should mention too, that, we'll be talking some college golf later, but it relates to the weather. Unique thing down at the Illinois Wesleyan Invitational, the Kathy Niepagan Invitational on the women's side. They were supposed to play 18 yesterday, 18 today. They squeezed 27 holes in yesterday, kept the teams overnight, and played nine holes today. And not to spoil sweet spot for Monday, but we did document the fact that at about 10 o'clock this morning when they were in the middle of the final nine holes. It was 39 degrees with rain, 23 mile an hour winds, and a wind chill temperature or factor below 30. Andrea Wieland on their Facebook account, Gary, said that it just had started to sleet. Welcome to spring golf at the college level in the upper Midwest, right?
Oh, welcome to Scotland too. That sounds like Scottish weather to me. I played over there in Scotland on a day just like that on the old course, Rob, where it was probably 42 degrees and raining horizontally. It's tough to play a college event in that kind of weather.
Well, and funny you should mention that Whitewater did their every 4 year, I think it is, trip over to Ireland. I'm not sure if they got to Scotland or not. Their soccer coach over at UW Whitewater arranges trips like that. And so they should have felt right home at the in the elements. They held on to their fifth spot today with a 331 total. The low round of the day was a 297 by St. Catharines of Minnesota, which posted a five-shot win over Wash U of St. Louis. Top-ranked Emory struggled in the conditions. They had shot 295 in the first round yesterday and then played the other nine holes, but closed up at 317. And Whitewater finished right behind them in the standings, but about 30 shots behind them in terms of score there. The top Warhawk finisher was Ellie Johnson. She finished off a 79 today. But boy, you really got to be ready for any kind of, rain, wind, sleet, snow. This time of year, it can come and can go. A lot of other tournaments at the college level in the upper Midwest yesterday, it was one and done. They weren't even going to come back on Sunday. So kudos to the Illinois Wesleyan tournament for finishing even in less than ideal conditions. But that's what we get this time of year.
Yeah, I was going to say any team score around 300 in those kind of conditions is outstanding. So I know Whitewater was a little bit above that, but a couple of those schools that shot around 300, that's some great golf in that kind of weather.
And to put a positive spin on that, Gary, it can only get better from here. So there we go.
We hope.
Better watch what we say. I'm guessing the weather was a little bit better down in Texas, where the Veritex Bank Championship on the Corn Ferry Tour wrapped up. And we had a Wisconsin golfer in the field, a very eventful week for Hunter Eichhorn. He finishes up today with a 70, one under par, and finishes T60, or he's right now at T60. I think that's pretty much where he'll finish at 5 under for the week. Gary, a rough nine holes in the third round, actually a rough couple of holes in the third round. And we might've been talking about a top 25 finish or better for Hunter Eichhorn, but the experience of getting into a Korn Ferry event after shooting 62 in the open qualifying, I think will really pay off for the former Marquette golfer.
Yeah, Rob, I couldn't agree more. Hunter's the kind of golfer who is not afraid to go low. You know, that 62 was evidence of that. And he's shot a bunch of 63s and fours, throughout his career. Even as a junior, he had a couple 63s. And you're right, that three or four hole stretch in round three where he made a double and a triple. And then I seen in the final round today, on Sunday, he had another double and it was on a par five. And then he finished with the bogey on a par five. So he's probably kicking himself a little bit for the way he played the par fives and the couple doubles and the triple he made. But all in all, really, really good week. First start on the Korn Ferry Tour, and to make the cut is a big accomplishment.
He opened 66-69. He was top 10 after one round, and I think kind of got all of us excited that maybe this might be his breakthrough moment. But as we look at that third round, Gary went out in 41, that double and that triple on holes three and four after starting out with a birdie on one, but he comes back with a 33, and I think that shows you kind of the mindset, the mentality that Hunter has. He doesn't get bothered by much, and you can never really tell, when he's on a birdie run or whether he's on a bogey run. He's kind of the same outwardly, at least I think kind of what we saw at the State Open last year. That seems to be his demeanor on the golf course.
Yeah, that has carried him a long way and will continue to carry him a long way, Rob. As I remember talking to Coach Bailey at Marquette, and he said one of his biggest attributes is he's so competitive. So he's focused on one shot at a time, and he's so competitive. After he makes a double or has a bad hole, he's determined, to make up for that and get some birdies instead of sulking and maybe letting it turn into a bad round. He'll turn it around and do the opposite. So I think that's probably one of his greatest strengths.
Let's go back to the Monday qualifier, Gary. The 62 included a couple of eagles, a birdie. I think there might have been a bogey in there, but you know, it was near flawless golf. But the thing that stood out to me, I believe he had an afternoon tee time, and another 62 had been posted in the morning. Of course, our Ryan French, the man behind the Monday Q info Twitter account, was already, you know, oohing and aahing at the low scores at that particular qualifier. And it's never easy when you go out needing to know you have to go low. But boy, if a 62 is on the board, Gary, and you're going out to play your round trying to, you know, get through to a Korn Ferry Tour event, to me, that's a daunting mental task. And Hunter handled that quite well.
Yeah, you know, knowing his mindset, Rob, he probably saw that 62 and said, you know what, if some guy shot a 62, that means I can shoot 62 also. That means that scoring is out there and I'm going to go get it. I'm guessing that's what he probably thought as he walked to the first tee.
So he goes from there to the tournament and, you know, you shoot a good round in the first round, Gary, and then do you think he starts thinking about what this could mean? Or you've known Hunter as much as anybody. Does he kind of stay in the moment and take one shot at a time? What do you think his mindset was? Because, boy, you know, 466s would have probably put him in position to get a temporary, you know, exemption on that tour.
Yeah, I'm sure he wasn't thinking ahead, Rob. I'm you know, if that thought entered his mind about what it could mean if he put up another good ones after that 66, I'm sure he, you know, drilled it out of his mind pretty quickly. He's pretty focused, as we've talked about. He's pretty much a guy who just looks at the next shot and takes it as it comes. So, you know, he might have between rounds thought a little bit about that kind of stuff, but I don't think on the course he thought about that at all.
So I think if you look at the blueprint for what he did, it to me, it was the, you know, it was ideal. Obviously, you know, getting through with, the five birdies, two eagles, there were no bogeys in that round either. So, but then you look at, his totals for the week, including the, let's go with just the tournament, the four round tournament, 16, 21 birdies and, 10 bogeys, two double bogeys, one triple. Obviously you start out and eliminate the double and the triple, but I mean, you know, we've watched people try to, you know, conquer the Korn Ferry Tour and the whole hierarchy process of the PGA Tour developmental circuits, and you got to make birdies. Do you feel six, you know, essentially five and a half a day is what he averaged? Do you think that's going to be, you know, is that kind of what he needs going forward? Is that, you know, what others need to kind of, as they're readying their games for potentially a professional run? I mean, that seems to be right around the number that you need to be in contention to make enough money to survive the game within the game on these tours.
Yeah, I would say so. And you know, Hunter's problem isn't making birdies. He'll make a ton of birdies. Now he's just got to eliminate a couple of his mistakes. I'm not sure, you know, how he made a couple doubles and a triple. I don't know if he hit balls out of bounds or I'm not sure what happened on those holes. But, you know, as you mentioned, it's a matter of turning the doubles and triples into bogeys. And then all of a sudden you're four shots lower. And like you said, you know, outside shot at a top 25 finish. He'll continue to make birdies. He always has. And now it's a matter of, at this level, managing your mistakes.
It'll be interesting to see when we see him again on the Korn Ferry Tour. He is entered in the Monday qualifier in 2 weeks, not this coming week's tournament, but the one coming up the week after that, as is Harris Sanat. He's in the Monday qualifier for that. Tomorrow's Monday qualifier for the, I believe it was the Lexcom Suncoast Classic. Jordan Hahn, George Kneiser, John Langhoff, Jordan Niebrugge, and Kaylor Steger. And a lot of people there in that list that are veterans of the Monday qualifiers. I noticed that Jordan Niebrugge, I believe, shot 69 in the qualifier that Hunter Eichhorn got through. Nice to see Jordan back, you know, in the mix. I don't know what we can expect out of him this year. We last saw him at the State Open. He's been in a handful, maybe, if that, you know, these Monday qualifiers. But yeah, you look at that list. Do you have a favorite to come out of that one, maybe, and be the next guy to tee it up on the Korn Ferry?
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned Jordan. I just talked to him by phone yesterday, Rob, because I saw that score and I wondered, I haven't seen Jordan's name pop up, you know, too much lately. And I talked to him, and as a matter of fact, he's had a back problem. And he's had a back problem for a couple of years that has come and gone. He said he's had 8 or 9 episodes where it's flared up over the last 2 years. And this last one was a bad one. He hurt his back about 2 months ago, and he hadn't played any competitive golf at all until that Monday qualifier.
Wow.
So I'll have something in the sweet spot that readers can look forward to on Monday. But he's feeling better. His back is, you know, it's something he's going to have to manage from here on out. He's doing a lot of PT and rehab. But, you know, for your, he said he was a little rusty. And he shot 68 or 69 in that qualifier. So if he can do that coming off a 2 month break, I'd hopefully look for him to, if his back is sound, to, you know, to continue to put up some good numbers.
There's another name in tomorrow's Lexcom qualifier on the Korn Ferry Tour that I was really surprised to see. We'll see if he actually tees it up, post the score. Chase Koepka, didn't he follow his brother onto the LIV Tour? And if he qualifies, is it all for naught? I mean, I to me, it just makes no sense. Again, we don't know enough about the, but coming out of the Masters and you know, LIV was front and center on all your storylines throughout the week, Gary. To me, that was, I kind of had to do a double take. I didn't expect to see a Koepka in a Monday qualifier, until LIV went away.
Yeah, I guess LIV dropped him, right? He's one of the guys that got dropped after that first year. And I interviewed Chase a couple times. He played in the Marquette Intercollegiate at Erin Hills a couple times when he was in college. Really nice young man. Obviously he had some big shoes to fill with his brother. But yeah, you wouldn't expect to see Chase pop up on those Monday qualifiers, but here he is. He's got to make a living, right, Rob?
He does. So we'll keep an eye on him. As we continue to climb out of the, you know, the glow of the first major of the year being the Masters, Gary, as I've been watching, you know, golf on TV this weekend, one question kept nagging at me. They turned the RBC Heritage here into an elevated event. What's your feeling on an elevated event the week after a major championship? To me, it felt like you're asking a lot of these guys to perform at the level. They're getting the leaderboard they want with Spieth, Fitzpatrick, Toffoli, Cantley, and Sungjae Im all in the mix, and John Rahm finishing early enough to get a lot of TV time today, but actually be in the booth and talking golf with the CBS crew. I just feel it's a lot in a short period of time, but at the same time, do you strike while the iron's hot? And you know, you got John Rahm to play consecutive weeks after winning the Masters last week. I'm conflicted. I was curious what your thoughts were.
Yeah, I think that is a tough ask of those guys who played in the Masters to tee it up the next week in RBC. And as a matter of fact, you know, Rory McIlroy, as we know, withdrew, which is going to cost him some money. I understand it's going to be a pretty hefty fine or a takeaway from his PIP, his performance impact bonus. But it is a tough ask. And you know, these designated events are going to be rotating, right? So maybe next year it isn't a designated event or a special event. I don't know. It is a tough ask, though, to ask those guys to go from one tournament to the next with an elevated field.
I thought the elevated fields were great earlier in the year. It really built interest when previously, you know, there wasn't, other than, you know, it seemed like it was, again, the same old every year. How many people were going to show up at the Waste Management Phoenix Open? Would Bill Murray show up at Pebble Beach? You know, what would John Rahm or Tiger Woods win at Torrey Pines? Because it seemed seem to be the two guys that own that course. You know, so it is a lot of the same. You know, we heard your friend Mark Rolfing on all the Hawaiian events, and he's back this week with the women's. You know, so I think it really jazzed it up. I'm not sure because we're going to be, you know, chock full of majors, one a month now through the month of July, and then all of a sudden we'll be talking PGA Tour playoffs to try to get the season done before the NFL season starts. So there's a lot of golf in a hurry, but it did seem like a lot. Speaking of schedules that end in a hurry, the college golf season is almost over, Gary D'Amato, and we've got women's college events, college championships coming up. But this week we had a couple of our D1 schools in competition, the Badger women at the Lady Buckeye Invitational, a really tough final round for the Badgers today, as they struggled to a 308, the highest score in the field and dropped two spots to finish 10th out of 14 teams. Pretty much a preview of next week's Big Ten championship. They played six, counted four, and it looks like they're still trying to figure out that fifth and sixth position. Emily Lauterbach struggled again today with a 79. I don't know. You know, we saw it last year with the Badger men. They didn't have a spectacular regular season in the spring, but then, you know, shot lights out at the Big Ten championship. I'm not sure. You know, we've all talked to the coaches. The challenge is to being a college coach is to get them to play well in the biggest tournaments at the right time. How do you think Todd Erlein does that with a group that's really struggled here during the spring season?
That is a challenge, Rob. It's like on the PGA Tour or the LPGA, gearing up for a major championship and trying to play your best golf at the right time. It's hard to do. I mean, it's you really don't have control over that in a lot of ways, over that aspect of a golfer. I mean, sometimes they get hot in the middle of a season, have a great run, and then cool off. But you just hope that they can all put it together at the right time. It's more hope, I think, than plan.
The other Division I team that's in action this weekend is the UW Green Bay women's golf team. And they were somewhat on a roll this morning, and but then really started to struggle here. I think the weather might have turned ugly in Carmel, Indiana, because that's where that weather from Bloomington, Illinois was, or Normal, Illinois was headed. They are currently wrapping up the final round of the Lady Jaguar Invitational. And 33 over for the day, and probably one of their poor single round performances. But yesterday, shot a 308. We're in the mix there in a T4 situation. They had moved up into a fourth alone earlier in the day. You know, again, Green Bay shown an ability to post scores low enough to maybe surprise people in the Horizon League. And, you know, if you're Lee Ranke, you've got to be happy with what you've seen out of your kids here in the early going. We talked last week about, you know, we didn't know what to expect when Jenna Anderson transferred out, but it looks as though Ashley Kalka, Isabel Malecki, Courtney Matschke, Kaylee Kutlowski, and this week, Ellie Fritsch, although Grace Walsh has really done a wonderful job in that 5-6 position of pushing for the five. So there's competition there. Again, it's almost like the Badgers, but in a different bit of a mental challenge. How do you get them to play as well as they have most of the spring after a weather-related bump in the road here to close out the penultimate tournament in the regular season? I can tell you this, Gary, weather won't be an issue, or you hope not, down in Howie in the Hills, Florida, where they always play the Horizon League Championship. It should be warm and sunny with and maybe humidity might be the biggest thing, and you might get your pop-up afternoon shower, but I don't think we're going to see snow in Howie in the Hills, Florida.
Oh, heaven help us if we do, Rob. Yeah, you know, they've had some big rain events lately down in Florida in the Fort Lauderdale area. But yeah, they should. The weather should be significantly improved over what they've had to deal with.
There are a couple of conference tournaments going on this weekend, starting today. With probably somewhat challenging conditions, the Missouri Valley Conference Championship is underway. And on the women's side, and Abby Caviani in round one shoots a 79. That's good for T21. She's playing the number one spot for Missouri State. For me, what's exciting this spring into summer, Gary, is we've got some kids that are cycling out of college golf. I believe Abby's a senior. I don't know if she's got aspirations to go on and play professionally the way that Emily Lauterbach does. And potentially Mia Seaman, who's wrapping up her college career at Lipscomb, who's also a previous state open women's open champion in Wisconsin. But we do have a number of young ladies who are in the number one spots at their school. And Abby's had a wonderful career at Missouri State. I tell you, you know, we always wonder, you know, about fits when they make their, you know, verbal commitment, sign their national letter of intent. Missouri State's been a wonderful fit for Abby Caviani.
Yeah, she has. She's had a terrific career, both in state, you know, in events in the summer here, and at Missouri State. Looking forward to hopefully seeing her teeing it up around the state this summer again.
Back on the men's side, the Badger men wrapped up another solid week at the on the golf course at the Purdue Boilermaker Invitational. The one thing that stood out to me about this is out of nowhere, Graham Moody's in the lineup, and My goodness gracious, he lit it up. He almost won the tournament, Gary.
Yeah, that's crazy. But you know, we've seen Graham in the past, and especially not only at Wisconsin, but at summer events. I think he almost won the Ray Fisher last year. Terrific talent. So it's not really a surprise, but some of the scores are outstanding there.
And we saw Cameron Huss open up. I think now the challenge for Mike Wilson, who do you pick for your five? Now the women in the Big Ten are going to play six count four. But the men, you know, are still the traditional play five count four. I don't know if we want to, you know, put ourselves, you know, if we were baseball analogy would be the, put our managerial hat on and pick a starting lineup. I don't know who I'd pick. We've had great performances out of everybody. The high score in yesterday's 284 was a 75 from Cam Huss. It all looks good. You know, Cam Huss opened with a 65. I think you like to see guys that have gone low. Maximine Legros, the transfer, you know, 68 in the second round of the Boilermaker Invitational has been a really solid number one all spring. But, you know, you see a very consistent golfer in Clayton Tribue, the transfer out of Davidson, the Madison native. Gary, but you can't forget about Max Schwartz either. I mean, he's, you know, he shot 70 yesterday. He went 76, 75, 70. He's been a little bit more inconsistent, hasn't been in that varsity lineup very much. And then Daniel Oz has sat out the last couple of events, but, you know, in theory, still an option for Mike Wilson. Who do you go with? What's your starting five?
That's a tough one, Rob. Yeah, do you go on current form? Do you go on guys you know are capable of shooting, you know, some low scores? Do you go on? I'm sure there's some qualifying that's going on too for the bigger tournaments, especially. So it's tough. It's tough to pick five out of that group. There's six or seven really good ones.
I think you got to go with Cameron Huss and Coulter Smith, not necessarily at the 1-2 positions, but you know, as your backbone, because they've been in Big Ten championships before, and yeah, they've been the backbone of this transition into the new era of Badger golf. But you know, and I think Maximine Legros has earned his spot just based on not only his steady play throughout the spring, but his exceptional play throughout the spring. So you've got three right there. You know, Clayton Tribue has been through the ropes. He actually played in an NCAA regional last year after helping Davidson win their conference tournament. So I think, you know, I would go with Clayton Tribue. Then it comes down to Moody, Oz, and then Max Schwartz. And they all, you know, have presented resumes that make them worthy. I don't know what the situation is with as far as substitutions. I saw in one women's college event, there was a college championship. There was the opportunity to sub, where you can bring a sixth player and throw them in there. You know, if say someone goes high in round one, you might want to take a flyer on your number six in round two, and then figure out, you know, who you play in round three. You know, that might need to be the case. I like that substitution rule. I wish we'd see more of it.
I agree. I don't know why, you know, it's just like college basketball, you start five guys and, you know, you have some good guys on the bench, and one guy's struggling, you bring somebody in, right? So I would like to see that in golf on a permanent basis. I would like to, of course, you know, then you have to bring an extra guy on the trip and everything, and there's some extra expense. I understand all that, but I would love to see you be able to substitute a guy out after the first round or the second round even.
Well, I think it goes to form too, that you were talking about, Gary, and you talked about form throughout the spring, and it's easy to gauge that from one week to the next, but from one round to the next, and you don't know, you know, I mean, we've seen situations where kids come down with, you know, maybe food poisoning, you know, with a bad meal,
sure,
they're fighting a cold and it doesn't get better. And then, you know, you're left with your four. So we'll see where that leads. But I guess the as you look ahead to the next week, Gary, what's on your plate? What are you looking forward to? We're kind of in this period of transition. We're about 2 or 3 weeks out from the U.S. Open local qualifier in Wisconsin that kind of kicks things off. We've seen a bunch of high school tournaments. Sheboygan North has looked really good with Mason Schmidtke in the early going. I wanted to mention too, you know, they got in a 18-hole event. I'd like to know how they knew this, though. An 18-hole event yesterday, that group of schools that always seems to travel together, Brookfield Central, Menominee Falls, Sheboygan North, They went down to TPC Deer Run. I know you played that a lot for the John Deere Classic Media Day.
Yes.
And in the past, they played a two-day event somewhere in Bloomington, Illinois. And this year, they decided to go better course one day, but they picked the day where there's no snow. These coaches from Southern Wisconsin, they've got something going on with Mother Nature, because how do you pick TPC Deer Run on the best day of the spring before the worst day of the spring? That to me is, I think we need to launch an investigation, Gary D'Amato.
Yeah, that's some pretty good coaching, I would say, Rob. You know, you asked what I'm looking forward to. Exactly 2 weeks from Monday, when this podcast will post, is the Sheboygan Riverdale Country Club Tournament of Champions, which is on Monday, May 1st. The next day is U.S. Open local qualifying. So it's 2 weeks, Rob, to tournament season, official start of tournament season outside of colleges and high schools. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Absolutely. It's you think a snowstorm in Wisconsin rolls in fast, the tournament season rolls in and it doesn't go away. We'll have stuff from the first part of May all the way through the last putt at the State Girls High School Championship and really beyond. There's even some stuff that goes on after that in the WPGA section. So don't worry about what's outside your window. We've got golf coming your way. You'll be able to play golf again very soon. And we assure you, golf is it's funny because people, you know, were joking that 2023 season was nice for the week that we had it.
Yeah, but we've got a long season ahead of us. I'm not worried about a few days of cold and rain. You know, it will. I promise you, Rob, it will warm up again. I promise.
Absolutely. Well, Gary, appreciate it. I'll tell people in the in our close here what they can do with this extra time on their hand. They can enter our Great Golf Story contest, but we'll talk about that in a second. We'll talk golf again next week. How's that sound?
Sounds good, Rob. Thank you.
All right. For Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, again, enter our Great Golf Story contest by our with Golf Time Midwest Magazine. They're our sponsor here this month as we wrap up our promotion of that Great Golf Story contest. The basics of the contest are this: 350 words or less. It has to be funny, fantastic, or of human interest. The lucky winner will be entered into a drawing, and possibly the most popular person around, because if he or she wins that drawing, they'll win a weekend getaway for six to Eagle Ridge Resort in Galena. So go to our website and check out the link to Golf Time Midwest Magazine. You can find it on the right-hand side of our main page. And otherwise, just head on over to our sister website, golftimemag.com. There is an entry form online that you can fill out that includes space for your 350-word essay in our Great Golf Story contest. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.